My name is Mark Stinger. I'm an epidemiologist with the Washington State Department of Health, and I work in our Infectious Disease and Reproductive Health Assessment Unit, which is kind of a cool place to be in Washington State because we're programmatic cross-dressers. We get to dip our hands into data from the TB registry, from hepatitis, from HIV, and from STDs. And we were really excited when Donna and Kim released the RFA way back in 2006 to sort of be part of this because we had a history of wanting to look at our STD data geospatially and had been geocoding our STD data. So we thought this would kind of be a slam dunk and be easy for us. Well, what we were mostly interested in and had been doing for a number of years was matching registries so that we could look at comorbidities. So this project was also something we thought might be really useful for us to help us to better understand the synergy between various epidemics in Washington State, and in particular to look at the intersection between bacterial STDs and HIV. And you know, our HIV registry was not geocoded, so we didn't have the same level of spatial information, except for cases that did match, which just didn't give us the complete picture. So what we were really interested in doing with these data was to be able to come up with something that could allow us to take really scarce resources and becoming increasingly more scarce resources for both HIV prevention and for STD interventions and try to target them geographically. Because not all of our jurisdictions across Washington State, and this is clear with most of the states, we have a real disparity between urban and rural, and yet our distribution of resources for disease intervention are sort of uniform. There's some politics around that, so we tend to spend a fair amount of money where we have no cases. And to be able to demonstrate that and to use a more rational scientific base or an evidence base for allocating resources, we really needed to be able to do a better job with this. And we're also very interested in Washington State. We're not a completely integrated program between HIV and STD. At this point, we're all sort of smushed together in the same unit, and our epidemiologists are able to share data. But we really haven't addressed at the level of services for folks presenting with HIV or STDs in Washington State a truly integrated one-stop shop that's convenient. And these data were hopefully going to be useful to allow us to do that. However, when we began, when we were funded initially for this pilot program, you know, we thought it was going to be a slam dunk, but we also discovered that we had some infrastructural problems that we really needed to address to be able to manage these data. The first thing we looked at was, how do we do this for STDs, and can we model the same sort of basic infrastructure for geocoding and getting geospatial information for our HIV data? Now, we're fairly fortunate in Washington that we've been able to move forward beyond a single STD registry at the central level where all the paper comes in and we do all of our data entry. We were able to push data entry in our STD system out to our local jurisdictions so that as the cases are reported by local providers, they're entered into a case registry that's web accessed. So we had all of this information coming in a very timely way, and we batch geocoded everything and could store it right in that large registry. So it was then available to both our local partners as well as at the state level. And we had routinized this in a couple of different ways, mostly because our Department of Health was very interested in GIS, first for environmental and point source pollution issues. And we have Hanford, which has all this, you know, wonderful toxic waste. And we were very concerned about migration of toxic waste, so our department funded initially enterprise-level GIS to help us to be able to understand that. And we were able to take advantage of that in our geocoding. And that actually sits in a separate portion of our health department. But we worked with them to develop a set of internal servers that are extremely secure. And we move our STD data on a regular basis over to them. They geocode it, pull it back to us, and we put it into our central STD registry. And then we looked at HIV. And I don't know how many in the room are familiar with the old HARS that was, you know, initiated way back in the dark ages when, you know, when I was young. Well, in any event, that system was not designed to hold address information very efficiently. And we really didn't even understand the nature of the problem until we began to try to pull our data and to geocode in this pilot project. But a couple of things. First and foremost, the sensitivities around HIV and AIDS reporting encouraged public health officials to abdicate sanity and to collect way less information than we ordinarily would for a reported case of a communicable disease or an infectious disease. So there was no perceived need for address information in case reporting in Washington State from the very beginning of the epidemic. Now, address information that did come in ad hoc on case reports was entered into a single field to hold the address at report in the old HARS system. But it couldn't hold any updates. So when we got a progression from HIV to AIDS, if a new address was entered in, it just overwrote whatever was there. So we really were looking at these data and saying, what do these addresses mean? And if we geocode them, how can they possibly be meaningful to us? Because we really didn't have the kinds of information in old HARS to give us an audit trail. So understanding the meaning of those addresses was complex and somewhat difficult. So we thought at that point in time, well, can we supplement the poor information we have in HARS with information from other registries? So we thought, well, we've got this great matching that we do across registries. Can we begin to pull address information on patients where it's missing in HARS from other registries and help us to, you know, enhance the completeness of our data as well as the overall utility of it? And then we figured out that we don't have any place to put these data. You know, we can't write them back into HARS, as we were fortunate to be able to do with our new STD surveillance system. So we really had to think in a systematic fashion about what we would do with these data to sort of keep them available to us, sort of on call, and also allow us to sort of aggregate by date of report, current address, so that we can look at not only incident cases geospatially, but also where people are currently living, which would help us to inform our care services program. So what we did was we took data from multiple sources, but the principal sources were our Ryan White Care Services Early Intervention Program that provide medications and early intervention lab services to people with HIV. And because they're an insurance-like program, they actually were interested in where people lived and what mailing address was and different ways to get in touch with them. So they had much more complete information on some of our cases. We have a lot of frequent flyers across all of our registries, so we were able to pull in some address information from our STD and TB registries. And then finally, we had a new and emergent source of information in electronic lab reporting. The HL7 messaging, I won't go into the technical aspects of that, but it has places to store address information on the patient. And where it was present, we're actually able to pull that out and match it with the appropriate patients. So what we're doing now is we've actually established a central data warehouse for all of our patients in our HIV registry, as well as new patients in our STD registry, where we're able to store multiple addresses, and with that an effective date, the source of the address type, whether it was an address at diagnosis, a current address at insurance update, those sorts of things. And now we pull all of those information in, and we feed it into that sort of routine infrastructure that we put in place for geocoding. So we have it's right now an Access database, although we're in the process of re-platforming that in SQL. It allows us to query it very quickly in our data warehouse. So this data warehouse, which is accessible only to the epidemiologists that share sort of our assessment unit organizational structure, it's on the same secure servers that we actually store EHARS data on now. We've since moved into EHARS, although there's still some difficulties with storing multiple address information in EHARS. So any of you who are using EHARS, you know it's document-based, and you're actually able to capture information on addresses and the effective dates, but it doesn't really allow you to store all of the sociodemographic data or different levels of spatial assignment beyond the census tract and longitude and latitude. So all of the other assignments that we're interested in, which have to do with our health planning regions, has to do with rural versus urban coding, and some other geospatial data, this is where our warehouse becomes very useful to us because we can store all of the geocoded assignments in a single warehouse. And what's nice about this is we can actually now run macros that allow us to query all of our HIV cases so that we can have spatial information on incident cases, whether it's incident HIV disease across all cases, or those who progress to AIDS, what's their residence? We can compare, have they moved between when they were initially diagnosed with HIV and then have an AIDS diagnosis, and we always are concerned about migration for care as we do our unmet needs analyses. And the way our data warehouse is set up is we can pull these data fairly quickly with a set of macros depending on what information we want. Well, now that we have this infrastructure in place, we had our warehouse, we began to say, can we look at these data now for that principal interest that we started with back in 2006, which was application to looking at comorbid cases. And I'm not going to go through these in great detail because they've certainly been seen elsewhere. But we were looking at gonorrhea among persons who are HIV positive. It was really important for us to know where the people that are HIV positive are living so that we could do some good denominators in calculating rates at lower levels of geography than just the state. And also we were looking at HIV prevalence among all of our cases of bacterial STDs, including gonorrhea. And again, denominator data was pretty important for us in that. This is an example of one of the suppression techniques that Kim talked about, which is smoothing. What we have here is our gonorrhea rate per 100,000. And the data are actually at the census tract level. And the way you do this smoothing, I think, is actually kind of cool. Any of you who've done any hiking or looked at contour maps, smoothing is very similar to that, where the rate in each one of those census tracts is actually an elevation. And then you just sort of drape a surface over it. It's really rather cool. But what it does allow us to do is sort of, in a weather map fashion, see where the hot spots of disease are in our jurisdiction. Looking at our HIV cases, now these are prevalent cases, so these are all persons who are known, not known to be deceased, and where they currently reside. And there's another suppression technique that's being illustrated here, and all of these dots are randomly distributed. So we had an XY point within a census tract, and then we said randomize it within that tract. Don't stick it on the intersection, just randomly distribute it across the geographic census tract. And we're able to actually do some comparisons, and you begin to see that there are some parts of our state where we're really looking at comorbidities ecologically, where we have high numbers of HIV and AIDS cases and high rates of gonorrhea. And then we said, let's take this one step further. Let's look at our gonorrhea cases among persons who are HIV positive, and where are they? Now, there are many fewer of those, thank goodness, but we also begin to see, and the cell suppression or the masking technique here is the same as before. We sort of distributed these points. The other end of that is you'll notice that the scale of this map is so broad that it would be almost impossible, even if I had these directly plotted to the longitudinal latitude, to make any sense of where those people actually live. So there are some different techniques we've used to protect these data. But we can also drill down a little bit when we're looking at our comorbidities so that we can begin that process of better targeting our resources. And what I'm looking at here is the state of our map, and we've exploded out the central Puget Sound region, which is essentially Seattle metropolitan area. And we've plotted our cases by census tract here. Now, I've left out contextual information. There are no roads or streets. So even though we're able to now see the neighborhoods, again, the information is still secure enough in terms of being able to identify individuals. But for those of us who know the region and are working with it, we're able to better target at the neighborhood level the kinds of DIS intervention services and also prevention case management that we might want to target to just those neighborhoods, because that seems to be where we have our issue with HIV and STD comorbidity. Well, some take-home lessons. This information is incredibly valuable. Planners all over your state, from your care services folks to disease prevention specialists working in STD clinics, and the medical care infrastructure interested in doing a better job serving their patients, really want to have this kind of information. Once you have this infrastructure in place, it's relatively sustainable. The big investment is getting it built. And then the secondary investment is making sure that the staff who have access to it are trained to use it, and will also preserve the confidentiality of patients. no presentation would be complete without acknowledgments of the people who really do the good work in Washington State and work with me, Jason Carr, who is an epidemiologist that sits right across the wall from me. Our STD services section manager, Mark Aubin, was very supportive of this work from the very beginning of geocoding. And of course, I'd like to thank both the OASIS and the SSUN, which is the Sentinel Surveillance Network, or the STD Surveillance Network groups, for all of their collaboration on this. And thank you.